These great themes that are already at play in Lewis, and as a result of their being at play, will prod him on. And when he becomes a Christian, he finds the answers.
Welcome to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm Louis Moflaherty, author of C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell, a companion and study guide to the Screwtape Letters. And I'm also the creator of this podcast and your host. Today, I'm sharing another in my occasional feature called Why Read Lewis. This series encourages you to read a particular work from Lewis. The spotlight shines on one of his lesser-known titles for this episode. The book is simply called Dimer. Even some serious readers of material from Lewis are not familiar with this long narrative poem that was initially published in 1926 under the pseudonym of Clive Hamilton. It was republished in 1950 with Lewis credited as the author. In a few minutes, three Lewis scholars, Drs. Jerry Root, Crystal Hurd, and Don King, will each share their own reflections of Dimer. Each were recorded independent of each other and didn't know what the other would share. But before getting to that, allow me to provide a little more background about Dimer, although each of my guests will share some of what I'm about to say. If you are familiar with Lewis, then you might be aware that when the poem Dimer was published in 1926, he was not yet a Christian, nor had he embraced theism at that point. Besides the 1950 reprint, it is also included in the 1969 collection entitled Narrative Poems, and also available in the more recent The Collected Poems of C.S. Lewis that was edited by Dr. Don King and published in 2015. As noted, Don King is one of my guests today. He, along with Crystal Hurd and Jerry Root, will hopefully spark your interest to read or reread this long narrative poem. As with previous episodes in this series, I will simply say the name of the individual before they speak, and then provide some brief biographical information at the end. Also, be sure to check the show notes for a link to buy the book Dimer and other relevant links. Dr. Jerry Root will begin with his reflections.
Dimer is an important book in the Lewis corpus, and unfortunately, it's a very neglected one. Lewis longed to be a poet. He loved narrative poems, and it is his best narrative poem. It was published in 1926, even before he was a Christian. And while it displays Lewis's poetic style and his strength of communication, I think it's important because many of his richest ideas are in germ or in seed in that particular book. The setting is a young man named Dimer who is in a city that was modeled after Plato's Republic. But as Lewis says in the narrative, the designers of the city had tortured into stone the bubbles the academy had blown. And they made this rigid world, and Dimer's in an indoctrination hall, and he's being made coercively to buy into all the dictates and presuppositions of this city. We find, however, that one of Lewis's biggest ideas, and I think his absolute biggest idea, I can take you to every Lewis book and show you where he either refers to the idea or states it explicitly, is that reality is iconoclastic. An iconoclast breaks idols. I have an image of God or my world. Maybe I read a book or had a conversation and pieces of the puzzle came together for me. Well, that image, helpful as it might be in the moment, if I hold on to it too tightly, it competes against my having a growing image of God or a more robust image of my world. Reality itself is iconoclastic in that it breaks those idols. And Dimer, sitting in this indoctrination hall, one day looks outside and it's a spring day. And Lewis writes in the poem, "Who could ever legislate spring?" And Dimer gets up and Colcoxes the lecturer and kills him and bolts from the city. Little does he know what's happening in the city till later in the book, that an entire rebellion occurs in his wake. But nevertheless, he goes off trying to find himself and understand his real world. He ends up coming to a castle. And in this castle, he finds himself in a room of mirrors. And in this room of mirrors, he's scared immediately because not only is reality iconoclastic and it reveals the world he had come from was not real, but also he sees his image in these mirrors and he's afraid at first, but realizes he's only looking at himself. The concept of subjectivism that is also deeply warned against throughout the corpus of Lewis' writing has some expression at this point as well. Dimer cannot discover the world if he's self-referential. And this room of mirrors warns him of that. And yet, in this castle, he finds a woman and he fornicates with her and produces a child. He tries to flee the castle and then he desires to go back to see the woman, but he's prevented by an old hag and he has to understand that he's not as strong as he thinks he is if he could be rebuffed by this hag. He ends up going on and in his adventures discovers a student who has also fled from the city, but he's horribly wounded and he's been blinded by his wounds, and the wounds have occurred in the time that this rebellion took place in the city. And this student is cursing the name of Dimer. And Dimer has to discover that this student has an image of the world that's different than Dimer's take of it. And neither of them have a complete view, but both of them have a partial view. And again, reality is iconoclastic. Finally, in his adventures, Dimer finds himself in the home of a magician. And the magician is evil and tries to get Dimer to enter into dreams and gives him dreams that are fairly salacious, actually. And finally, Dimer realizes he's not dreaming about anything real. He's just projecting himself on the people he's encountering in the dreams. And we almost find in this some hint at what Lewis would later describe in an essay called Talking About Bicycles, that there are four phases of enchantment: to be unenchanted and have nothing awakened in us, then to come to the moment of enchantment where we think that the very thing that awakened longing in us is the object of our longing and can somehow fulfill us, only we discover that's all illusion. And so we come to the moment of disenchantment, and we, in that moment of disenchantment, can become frustrated and discouraged. If there is a moment of re-enchantment, it will be when we finally discover that it is God alone who can satisfy the deepest desires of the heart and satisfy the greatest dreams of the heart. Well, what ends up happening with Dimer, because Lewis is not a believer at that time, is he bolts from the house of the magician, but the magician shoots him and wounds him. And we find out, too, that there's a price to be paid for Dimer's philandering, even in the realm of his dreams. Eventually, he has to confront the offspring of this union that he had with this woman in the castle. And this particular offspring is a monster, and it ends up killing Dimer at the end of the day. And it ends somewhat in despair, but it also ends by revealing to us, I think, these great themes that are already at play in Lewis, and as a result of their being at play, will prod him on. And when he becomes a Christian, he finds the answers, and he's able to insert some of these answers in a robust way, because even Lewis understands any understanding he might have of God is never a complete understanding. It's like Lucy has to discover in Prince Caspian when she sees Aslan for the first time on that second journey to Narnia, Aslan, you're bigger. And he says, no, child, I am not, but every year you grow, you'll find me bigger. Years ago, I was in a discussion with J.I. Packer, and he wanted to know why Lewis, right after his conversion to Christianity, could write a book like The Pilgrim's Regress, an allegorical apology for Christianity, reason, and romanticism, 1 year after his conversion, and write it over a period of 3 weeks while he was vacationing in Ireland with his friend Arthur Greaves. And I suggested to him, I think it's because he had already asked most of the questions in Dimer, but by the time he wrote The Pilgrim's Regress, he now had answers to give for those questions that had arisen. So Dimer becomes an extremely important book in understanding the corpus of Lewis's writing. And that's why I think it's so important to me, and I would encourage others to read it.
Next is Dr. Crystal Hurd.
In summary, Dimer chronicles the tale of a young man who meets a mysterious young woman who mates with her and creates a monster. The monster eventually kills Dimer and becomes a god. The original version was written in prose in 1916 when Lewis was 18 years old. Later, in 1922, he would return to the idea and restructure it as a narrative poem. Its first title was The Redemption of Ask, Ask being the name of the Adam figure in the creation myth of Norse mythology. The poem would be published 3 years later as Dimer and, quote, found some good reviews and almost no readers, according to Lewis. The poem is composed in rhyme royal septets, utilizing an A-B-A-B-B-C-C rhyme scheme throughout. This form was previously used by many poets, including Chaucer, Edmund Spenser, Shakespeare, and William Wordsworth, among others. I think one of the most interesting things about Dimer is that it's essentially a political poem. Lewis himself admits that its origins come from political leanings and persuasions of his youth. The poem was written while Lewis was still an atheist, and while he was caught up in the conflicts of the early 20th century, as well as the ideals of the age. Of this poem, Lewis wrote, "In those days, the new psychology was just beginning to make itself felt in the circles I most frequented at Oxford. This joined forces with the fact that we felt ourselves, as young men always do, to be escaping from the illusions of adolescence, and as a result, we were much exercised about the problem of fantasy or wishful thinking, the Christina dream, as we called it, after Christina Pontifex in Butler's novel, was the hidden enemy whom we all determined to unmask and defeat. My hero, therefore, had to be a man who had succumbed to his allurements and finally got the better of them." The magician in the poem is modeled after William Butler Yeats, whom Lewis visited twice during his early years at Oxford, and who seemed obsessed with fantasy and magic. Dimer rebels against the totalitarian state and indulges in what Lewis calls anarchism. He writes, quote, "I put into it my hatred of my public school and my recent hatred of the army," unquote. In it are echoes of early and impressionable works like Wagner's Siegfried and The Twilight of the Gods and historical events such as World War I and the Russian Revolution. This is reflected in the verse. "There is a city which men call in scorn the perfect city, eastward of this wood. You've heard about the place. There I was born. I'm one of them. Their work, their sober mood, the ordered life, the laws are in my blood. A life, well, less than happy, something more than the red greed and lust that went before."
And finally, Dr. Don King.
Dimer, published in 1926, is Lewis's most important poem, both because of the sustained effort he put into writing it and because of its ambitious narrative structure. Indeed, it's a supreme effort at writing narrative poetry, that kind of poetry by which he hoped to achieve poetic acclaim. Some listening to this may not know that until Lewis was about 30 years old, his one great ambition was to become a great poet. So this helps to explain why Lewis spent 10 years between 1916, when he first started working on the poem, and 1926, when it was published, in a single-minded effort to write the poem. We know that the earliest draft was written when he was 17 years old and living with his tutor, W.T. Kirkpatrick. This draft hasn't survived, but it was entitled The Redemption of Ask, and it was actually a prose version. Later, in 1950, when Lewis was reflecting on the poem when it was reprinted, he wrote this about the poem. "I am told that the Persian poets draw a distinction between poetry which they have found and poetry which they have brought. If you like, between the given and the invented, though they wisely refuse to identify this with the distinction between good and bad. Their terminology applies with unusual clarity to my poem Dimer. What I found, what simply came to me, was the story of a man who, on some mysterious bride, begets a monster. Which monster, as soon as it has killed its father, becomes a god. This story arrived, complete, in my mind somewhere about my 17th year. To the best of my knowledge, I did not consciously or voluntarily invent it, nor was it, in the plain sense of that word, a dream. All I know about it is that there was a time when it was not there, and then presently a time when it was. So that's Lewis talking about how the poem came to him. The version of Dimer that we have now was first begun in 1922. In the diary that Lewis was keeping at this time, he, if we look at it closely, it illustrates in great detail how deliberately and intensely he worked on the poem. It contains more than 75 direct references to Lewis's work on Dimer. More often than not, the diary entries show that he is at least upbeat, if not jubilant, about his progress. Many of the diary entries include comments such as, made some progress, pleased myself fairly well, felt fairly satisfied, pleased myself with it, and with considerable satisfaction. After several months of work, he writes in the diary, after supper I worked on Dimer, bringing it to the end of the storm. I was so transported with what I considered my success that I became insolent and said to myself that it was the voice of a god. So these diary entries recount his daily obsession both with his progress on the poem and his ambition to achieve fame as a poet. Why should we bother with reading Dimer now? The reasons are many, including, as I've already pointed out, it is the poem Lewis wanted to be known by. There are also insights into Lewis's creative process, his mastery of rhyme royal, the verse form used in the poem, and his facile handling of rhythm and cadence. Perhaps more important than any of these is the point that Owen Barfield makes about Dimer. He argues Dimer is worth reading because it is practically the only place where the voice of the earlier Lewis, that is the pre-Christian Lewis, is heard speaking not through the memory of the later Lewis, but one could say in his own person. Accordingly, in Dimer, we hear in Lewis's voice one that's stripped of religious dogma, utterly unbound by conventional Orthodox Christianity. So what is the poem about? Here's how Lewis summarizes the poem. The Platonic and totalitarian state from which the main character, Dimer, escapes in Canto 1 was a natural invention for one, he's referring to himself, Lewis, who detested the state, and who was by temperament an extreme anarchist. I put into the poem my hatred of my public school and my recent hatred of the army. My hero was to be a man escaping from illusion. He begins by egregiously supposing the universe to be his friend, and seems for a time to found confirmation of his belief. Then he tries, as we all try, to repeat his moment of youthful rapture. It cannot be done. He sinks into despair and gives utterance to the pessimism which had, on the whole, been my own view about 6 years earlier. Hunger and a shock of real danger bring him to his senses, and he at last accepts reality. But just as he is setting out on the new and soberer life, the shabbiest of all brides is offered him, the false promise that by magic or invited illusion there may be a shortcut back to the one happiness he remembers. My main character relapses and swallows the bait, but he has grown too mature to be really deceived. He finds that the wish fulfillment dream leads to the fear fulfillment dream, recovers himself, and faces his destiny. Now, that's Lewis talking about the poem. In my reading of the poem, I would put it this way. The poem begins by portraying Dimer as a haughty adolescent intent on living an autonomous life. Later, when he faces the consequences of his earlier selfish, cruel actions, he achieves humility and a wisdom, though at high personal cost. In addition, the impact of Lewis's World War I experience and the influence of Norse mythology and literature are intrinsic to a fuller understanding of the poem. For instance, the influence of Lewis's service in World War I is evident in the emotional undulations of Dimer himself, reflected by his alternating highs and lows as we move through the poem. Furthermore, there are battlefield descriptions in the poem that surpass those included in his earlier Book of Poetry, Spirits and Bondage, published in 1919, and rivaling any battlefield descriptions in the work of Siegfried Sassoon or other World War I poets. The first hint that Lewis's love of Norse literature is at work in Dimer is found opposite the title page in the first edition, published by Dent in 1926. There we find this epigram from the Havamal. That's Odin's high song from the Edda, essentially a code of laws and ethics his people are to use to govern their conduct. And here's the epigram. 9 nights I hung upon the tree, wounded with the spear as an offering to Odin, myself sacrificed to myself. This epigram offers a key to understanding the poem's cryptic conclusion. Of course, there's much more that could be said about Dimer. The complete text of the poem, as well as Lewis's preface, as I said earlier, written in 1950, is available in the Collected Poems of C.S. Lewis, a critical edition that I edited and that was published by Kent State University Press in 2015.
And with that, I hope you are encouraged to read or reread Dimer. I'm William O'Flaherty, and I appreciate you listening to my podcast, All About Jack, a feature of my website, EssentialCSLewis.com. All About Jack is also part of the Theology Mix podcast network. Today's show is a special feature from an occasional series I call Why Read Lewis. I do it in hopes that you will want to read more books by Lewis. Of course, most of my episodes focus on authors who have written about him, usually, but let's not lose sight, though, of the importance of reading him firsthand. Speaking of books, let me briefly remind you that I am the author of C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell, a companion and study guide to the Screwtape Letters. It is available online. Paperback is $14.99, and presently the Kindle version is just $5.49. Buying the book is a great way to help support my podcast. You can also learn more about my book by visiting ScrewtapeCompanion.com. There you can get an immediate download of a free 20-page PDF sample of the book. Again, that's ScrewtapeCompanion.com. You can check the show notes for this and other links, including one to purchase the book you just heard about, along with links to other shows that my guests have been on. Speaking of my guests today, I told you I would give you some details about them at the end. So in order of appearance, Dr. Jerry Root is professor of evangelism at Wheaton College, and he is the co-editor of the best-selling The Quotable Lewis and co-author of The Surprising Imagination of C.S. Lewis. Dr. Crystal Hurd is an educator from Virginia and author of 30 Days with C.S. Lewis, a woman's devotional. Her website is crystalhurd.com. And finally, Dr. Don King is professor of English from Montreat College. He's the editor, as mentioned earlier, of the Collected Poems of C.S. Lewis, a critical edition, among with many other titles that specialize in Lewis's poetry, as well as about his wife, Joy Davidman. And again, thank you for listening to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty.